Welcome to the sixth preseason Supercoach Coach podcast for season 2021. This is likely going to be the last one before lockout. I think there's a slight chance that I might be able to secure Bryce. Anyway, I forgot. This is Marcus with FB Donkey again.
G'day, everyone. Good to be here again a couple of times in a couple of days. Yeah, it's getting serious. These preseason shows are the most fun to do because everything is unknown at this stage and there's just so many possibilities.
Yeah, before we have actual feedback in terms of whether or not our advice is good or bad, we can talk as much as we want and sound like geniuses. Awesome. It has been really fun. And considering our late start, I'm pretty proud of the amount of content that we've put up. And I think that's reflective of a bit more of the fun that we've been having with, yeah, just some video as well. It's weird how that really helps the flow of the show. Just watching these slight head nods and eye rolls. So yeah, we're on YouTube. If you haven't checked us out already and you want to see our faces, most people, I'm a big podcaster and I mostly stick to audio podcasts. So definitely know that's not for everyone, but there's an audience on YouTube that has been happy to get their hands on some of our content as well. So for our new and old listeners, welcome on board. We are very happy to have, yeah, like I said, smashed out a fair bit of content. Mark mentioned yesterday that we recorded as well. We wanted to do the main show yesterday, but we ended up spending the full amount of time recording our team picker together, which was pretty fun, Mark. We normally do that via text, and instead we got to go through that in person, and really good experience, I think.
Yeah, I think realistically what this whole preseason has been is one long team picker between us, and we did all the pre-chats, and then it got down to, okay, let's actually go into the detail of making some of these decisions together and debate what the pros and cons are of each sort of point. Where are the issues where we're not so sure about and we have to make compromises? So yeah, I think that was a really interesting process yesterday and helped me picking my team as well.
Yeah, I think my advice is obviously fantastic, so I can understand you saying that.
I think I'm on you, mate.
I do want to encourage everyone, if you were looking for a reason to, extra reason to support us, understanding not everyone can pay to support podcast content or vodcast content, but if you are looking for an extra reason, the two of us, we probably feel like collectively that's the best preseason show that we've done. Just going through that level of thinking, it's literally like at the final hour, here's what we're running through. And we go through the different configurations of, we're not quite agreeing on this, or this is where we've decided to take the risk. This is what it means elsewhere on the field. If you wanted to pivot this way and that way, this is what I consider. Patreon.com/supercoachcoach if you want to get your hands on that content. And on top of that, we have a prize going out to our leader at the end of the year. There's support levels that so you get access to a private Discord channel with the other sort of more premium Patreons, et cetera. So we've just tried to tier it to throw in some little extras depending on the support that you want, including, you know, a stubby holder as well for the more expensive tiers, some rare merchandise that you can share off to your mates. There's not that many that have gone out over the years, but it's there. Anything else that you want to mention, Mark, from a plugs or intro point of view before we launch into some probably ruck chat?
Well, my kids are very much more happy of me doing videos rather than podcasts. They think that I'm now a YouTube star, which makes them very proud of their dad. So I'm happy with that upgrade. And I think that, yeah, I'm keen to get into some footy. Like, we're like 4 or 5 days away now and starting to get a little bit excited. I think the late start was probably good. I think that anything that you're really talking about mid-February is just pure speculation at that point. Like, you've got no news, no information, nothing, you haven't seen anything. I think that our timing's been pretty good.
Yeah, it's funny. Back in the day, we'd do 2.5, 3 month run-ups into the season. And it's funny to see how much that's changed over time. We're like, yeah, a lot of that thinking we did right up front, we seemed reversed by the time we got to the end, which was fairly redundant.
And there was even some of the stuff that we were talking about yesterday where you were saying that I'd clearly changed my mind over the course of the preseason on different players and different topics. And that definitely happens the more information that you get. And hopefully the listeners are cool to see that and they understand that that's a good thing to be able to change your mind on players and situations with new information. And hopefully anyone listening or watching just gives us some feedback. If there's anything you want to see, let us know.
And I guess just as a reminder for any new listeners, we generally record this as, you know, a bit of a series anthology where you should be able to go through start to finish. Maybe you can skip the first one because that was our initial thoughts on the most picked. But even then, it follows a sequence and we tackle position by position so that no matter when you join in the season, you can start back off at the first one, listen to how you would craft your team and get a pretty good idea of what you should be doing. And again, we're really more about frameworks and providing you strategic considerations when picking your team rather than instructing people on specific players. We definitely red flag people who we think fall out of the types of picks that we think make sense. But outside of that, I think we are pretty open to recommending a range of players. It's more about just understanding how you manage your risk and your reward across your team. So with that, enough preamble. We don't have any really super specific topics to cover because we did the rookies and recap with Faz and Dunny, which is normally the show with you, Mark. But that was awesome anyway because Faz is a rookie guru. I think he did a very good job on the show, Mark. You had a bit of a listen?
I did. I listened to a bit more of it today, got through to the end of that. Definitely interested to hear his thoughts on some of the players because picking those rookies this year is getting pretty tricky, and those last maybe three or four rookies that come into your side are going to be very speculative, I think. And I think the preseason games was almost a little bit misleading. Like you have players like Brockman, Brune, Kaczynski all kicking multiple goals and really inflating their scores as a result. I think that they're not necessarily going to be turned out to be great picks, but they probably did enough to get round one selection. And so if they're picked, and since we've seen them score good, we might have to go with those guys. Yeah, very interested to hear their thoughts on that D6 position. So that, can you put a rookie on field in defense? It seems you probably can, but you're definitely taking some risks in two ways. One being that D6 may not score very well, and you're also bringing in a third rookie. So going that D8 position becomes super, super speculative, and you could end up with a dead player there anyway. And I guess that's okay in some senses because we are going to need a floating donut or some sort of donut in your side at some point. And as soon as we're looking to pick rookie rucks that are actually going to be playing, having a player in your side not playing is not necessarily the end of the world. We've never been in favor of picking one like straight up and just picking a player that could be generating money like on your midfield bench or defensive bench because it stymies your cash generation a little bit. But I think that early on in the season, we're going to see some rotation of rookies and you're going to end up with a player that's not playing pretty early on. But I guess thinking that through at this stage, I probably don't have anyone round one that won't be playing, which means that you really have to nail your captaincy score. I have heard some coaches talking about going with a value premium team. It's definitely something that I've tried in the past and it hasn't really worked out very well because ultimately you want the top scorers on each line in your team by the end of the season. So I'm not sure do you think that things are different enough this year that we should be going more along those lines? Because there's some reasons, right? Like we got the inflated scores from last year from the short quarters, meaning that the top line premiums are probably overpriced. Is that a worthwhile strategy this year, do you think?
Yeah, so it's something that we touched briefly on the Patreon show with Donny and Faz. And I think when I think about the game this year compared to previous years, the fact that we don't have cheap rookies or a good number of them, but also that the guns are stretched, it's kind of a terrible year to be doing guns and rookies because you're paying overpriced guns and you're potentially also paying for overpriced rookies just because they have job security. And so normally you want to pair like 100K rookie with 700K, you know, ultra premium. But if you're pairing a 700K ultra premium with a 200K Jarman Impey or Dom Tyson or Joe Danaher, you're going to maybe struggle for value generation to a degree. And so I think that's where we've talked about balance and where you try and take your risks throughout the season. You just want to be conscious of that, I think, as a whole for your team. It doesn't mean that you rule certain players in or out or you say, I'm not going to pick any overpriced players. But I would say that going in with all of Lloyd, Neil, Gorn, Grundy, Martin, or Dangerfield. Even just with one of those forward premiums, but even Lloyd, Neil, Gorn, Grundy, Danger, I already struggled to see how like you're managing your budget elsewhere on field. And so I think it's more about that combined perspective rather than saying don't pick Lloyd or don't pick Neil. It's just choose where you balance that because we don't have the same potential cash generation with our rookies.
Wow. It's interesting that you mentioned those players, those, what is it, five or six really expensive premiums. You could make a very good case that Grundy is not part of that category because he's a bit cheaper than previous seasons. But it's interesting that both of you and I, after yesterday, we've landed on the don't pick most of those guys end of the spectrum, where we're taking one, maybe two of those guys. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And I think that you're right, that it's not like we're value premiums right across the field, but you're trying to find a bit of value, some top line scorers, and getting as many rookies as you can on field. Because if you do have all six or five of those guys, however many there were, you're ending up with some super speculative 120K players in your team. Like you said, like, you can't see how they would pick their teams. They have to end up with very, very light benches just because we don't have many rookies around.
I think traditionally we probably have seen that with less experienced coaches, is that they're willing to push the rookie risk a little bit more. And truthfully, that can work out. If you catch enough of a hot run with some of those players, it might not matter you don't have the same cash generation, because the point scoring you get is just too hard to beat. And I've seen that in the past, looking at teams above me who are missing rookies early on, going like, how are they in the top 1,000? And I'm languishing, right? So we're not saying that it can't work out, just that in the way we like to balance our risk, obviously cash generation is king on the longer term. If you listen to some of the longtime experts of the game, or people who consistently smash it, you've got Laughing or Happy Raccoon and Hunter Punter on Twitter, they always talk about cash generation being king. And I think that's certainly something that I hope we've championed over 13, 14 years across the community, which is what you want to do is make sure you maintain this upgrade cadence. I get laughed at for using the word cadence, but that's what you want to make sure you maintain momentum on. And that leads into not picking too much injury-prone players, et cetera. And that's what we focus on. And it doesn't mean that you can't get away with going for all the top-line guys, having some dead spots in your rookies and still somehow succeeding. But it's probably not the way we spruik as much. And so I guess consider that when you're taking your own risks, is that there's no definitive way to play the game. Neither of us has won the 50K, but these are the things that we look out for, we value.
Yeah, unfortunately, sad news over summer. Happy Raccoon has retired from Supercoach. It's funny how some of these amazing super coaches, like Live the Dream, was around for a while. They just had unbelievable results back to back as well. And it becomes such an obsession for them. And they're so smart and they're so good at other things as well, that they actually can't just give their all to Supercoach for like years and years on end. And so sad to see him go, but he did leave a lot of excellent tweets last year. I think that was his intention, was put out some super advice out there and use that as a bit of a back catalogue that people could go back and look at when selecting teams. So yeah, sad to lose him to the community. It's interesting what you say about the novice teams, or a lot of teams that I see doing well early that have just almost completely dead benches. And you get a bit jealous early on because they're top 1,000 or they're killing it, but then those are the sort of sides that are going to drop off really significantly in the back half of the year. And those playing for leagues, realistically, you want to be getting stronger as the year goes on. Having value accrual is very important, and ranking as well. You need to protect your ranking in the back half of the year. It's a 22-week season, or 23, is it now? And so in order to do that, your team needs to be growing in value. It's not just getting points on field. It is a trading game, and yeah, we need to be making money over the course of the season.
So probably we need to have a bit of a talk about the rucks, Mark. That's the one topic that we've left unspoken most of the preseason. I think we had a bit of a chat early on and we said this is a very hard part of the ground and we'll have to see how things pan out. And then Rowan Marshall gets injured and basically defines what happens in the rucks this year. And I guess that's why we're okay not doing a ruck-specific show, because you're basically going Gorn Grundy, or you are taking an alternate strategy, one that involves picking a mid-pricer that you quite believe in, which is really quite out there, or it's around, hey, there's quite a few rookie rucks and maybe considering some of them. We've talked about this a little bit in terms of our team picker. So I guess there's no, with the time, I don't necessarily want to go all the way into a full ruck discussion. But I guess as a starting point, Gorn Grundy and your likelihood to go ahead with that combination, Mark.
Yeah, I think if you look back to, what was it, the first episode of the year where we talked about it a lot, I was going to go Gorn Grundy, but I was really looking for a way out of doing that. And I was just like scouring through all the players going, how can I possibly not pick Gorn Grundy? Because it's just so much money and Gorn is awesome, but he's priced at 140. that's ablet, like numbers. Nobody backs that up. And I mean, you can make a case that if he averages 125, 130 and you pick him, like it still works out okay, even though he's losing some value there as a captain option and just points on field, it's really good. So yeah, I was looking for a way out of that early on. There's no third ruck that's super obvious. Goldstein, Nick Nat. I think that Dunny spoke about going O'Brien, and I think that he's probably right that given the numbers we've seen and that he's got number one ruck role at the Crows, I do think he probably would be my next premium that I would pick. He's not super valued, like not like an unbelievable price. So that probably wasn't enough to draw me there. I considered Draper. He is probably really well priced. My concerns are probably he's still super young. He's got what, like less than 10 games AFL experience. And realistically, if you're paying that price, I want him to get pretty close to premium numbers and to play every week. And like he's potentially capable of that. It's a huge risk though. You're asking a lot for a young guy to do that. Last year, the Bombers protected him quite a bit, so they didn't get him to play every week. I'm not sure that he will play 22 this year. Like I think he'll play 20 if he's fit, but we have got Phillips as a backup and it wouldn't surprise me if the Bombers just gave him a week off here or there because it is a huge load for a young ruckman to take. And I just want to watch him as a Bombers fan. So that was probably enough to keep wear me off him. Hickey came into Pitanay, how much is he worth? I honestly haven't considered him.
After last year, you know, I was a bit burnt, but 421,000, he's shown some real upside. The first game back looks pretty good. Like, consistency has been the problem, but he's punched out some biggins.
He has some biggins, but he's also, there's a good chance he's going to drop an 80. Yeah, I'm not convinced that he's going to average over 100 to 110, which is what you'd need. 420, that's a decent hunk of coin. If it was 320, he'd come into consideration.
I wonder whether in the ruck it is enough to get a guy who treads water or even just has 10 points in their value. And I think if I saw that in Rob, but even then, Rob's price point is, it makes him hard to start because you can get a proper premium elsewhere. But Pitney is still not proper premium numbers elsewhere. Like you're taking a risk regardless. I guess it's an acceptance of saying if there's only two definitive ruckmen that you want to get and they look overpriced to start off with, can you take a guy that goes from 420 to 550 and not have them be keepers for the whole year? But it's more tread water, at least has a chance to increase. You wait for Gorn to decrease and then you do a swap. Is that like a relevant stepladder move where traditionally you wouldn't consider those things? And I think I saw some people last year, like Hunter Punter, talking about him making a concession on the stepladder last year, bringing Gorn down to McInerney, for example. And it's just the challenge of the ruck can potentially warrant a different way of solving for that equation.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think that, I guess you've got three strategies then. You've got the two premiums, you've got the ruck rookie, or you could go all rookies in the ruck, but or you could go the strategy that you're just considering there, which, look, I could see it working out, and I probably think that the reason why it could potentially work out would be potentially we've seen from the preseason that maybe rucks might not score quite as much this year. There just might be less stoppages. We don't know. Like, it's purely speculation that there's some reasons why that might happen, and if that does play out, then you could see someone like a Pitney average 10 points more. Gorn, just there's a natural cap that makes it a bit lower than previous seasons. You got Luke Jackson in there plus the ruck factor. Like, there is some reasons why that might happen. So yeah, I can see that could play out. The player that I would consider most in that role would be Big O, Oscar McInerney. He was really good for me last year. Steph Martin's gone, so he'll take on that number one ruck role really clearly now, and he has natural improvement as well. He's got a season of being the number one ruck under his belt, and in a team like the Lions should win a lot of games this year. I do think that he is potentially a player you could have in that role.
Only 20K more than Pitney, 443s. That's completely doable.
So the thing that probably got me over the line with not going with that strategy, which I really strongly, I looked for it. Like, I looked as hard as I could to try and find the way to make that work, is probably Gorn's early draw. Yeah, despite all these other factors, his early draw is so good. Because what you're trying to do is get Oscar McInerney to Gorn. You're hoping that Gorn drops early. Mm. And it just seems that if he's going to drop, it's probably not going to be early. And then the other factor being that we've had three rookie rucks turn up that are probably going to be number one ruck for their side, at least in round one. And we haven't seen that for quite a while, like a really long time. So that just draws me more towards that strategy. It becomes a Gorn Grundy or a rookie ruck strategy.
Now, certainly tempting to do that, but I guess just in calling out the risk is that all three of those that you're talking about there they have more medium-term job security concerns. You've got Hunter under threat from Marshall, who maybe apparently is back as early as round two. You've got Sean Darcy for Frio, and then you've got the specter of Mumford at GWS. And so we're talking there about Hunter, Flynn, and Meek potentially, right? How are you thinking through that in relation to the initial value on offer, especially considering the rucks suck, the rookies suck mostly elsewhere, versus what is the situation that you could be left with if they all start getting dropped in the few rounds?
That would suck. Like, you definitely, there's a gambling element to this. And that's why in the show yesterday, I suggested that you would probably not recommend it to someone that doesn't know what they're doing, because you may be put in a situation where you're making a very difficult decision. I think that Flynn, realistically, if he's fit, I know he hurt his ankle, but if he stays fit and he's named round one, he should be number one ruck for the Giants for at least the first five rounds. You'd think that they'd give him a really good run at it. So I think that there's some security around that. The other two, if Flynn was in the same boat as the other two, I might not run this strategy, because I think that they're waiting on their number one ruckman for the team coming back. Now, Hunter McKernan, I think everyone keeps forgetting about the fact that Sean McKernan's at the Saints now. Hunter, McKernan, Marshall, you play two out of them. McKernan can play forward, so can Marshall. There's probably a good chance that they go with those two guys rather than Hunter and Marshall. So that makes Hunter super risky. Meek, Treacy, and Darcy. So that's a similar situation you got going on there. And it could be, you probably would be less likely to play Meek and Darcy together. You'd probably be more likely to play Darcy and Treacy together, because Treacy can play forward better. So that gets a little bit tricky as well. But Darcy's had ongoing injury concerns. I'm not so convinced that he's going to come and walk straight back into that side, and may perform very well early and make it hard for Darcy to come straight back in, or hard to drop Meek and they may just play Darcy forward a bit more. I think that because I'm reasonably confident in Flynn, that allows me to be okay with the lack of job security in the other two. I don't know whether you want me to get into what happens.
I think, again, I don't think we need to get down to that nth degree with the time we have. It's more just for the people considering it to be going in it with, you know, eyes wide open. To your point, you don't want to be inexperienced doing this, because the exit plan, which I'm sure will help people cover if it comes to that, but the exit plan isn't clean, right? Because you'd likely not be able to get to Gorn straight away. So then you're going to have to pick through some of the currently planned C options multiple weeks late, and things can get haywire pretty quickly. Like, you may have to sacrifice a premium elsewhere, sacrifice momentum while your season is going. And yeah, and that's why it's not something that, especially speaking to a general cohort, a community out there, it's not something we'd be like, hey, everyone, it's a great idea, because it's risky. But I think what we're calling out is that it is potentially a viable strategy. And when you consider the rookie situation, it requires further consideration, right?
So can we just, it might be helpful just to go quickly over some of the history around this sort of situation. Pretty much for all the time that I've been playing Supercoach, there's basically been two dominant ruckmen in the game that are super highly prized, whether it was Sandilands and Cox back in the day or Gorn and Grundy now. The first time I think we tried picking not one of those guys was Mark Seabee, and got injured, and that went terribly, right? There was like a million shades in the ruck. We had the year where we had Jonathan Giles from, I think it was GWS's first season, and Giles worked out amazingly well, like season defining. You had to have him at R2. We've had the situation a few years ago with Witz going to the Gold Coast when he went up there, and that was also season defining. If you didn't have Witz, you would have really struggled that year. And then we had last year where we had, what, Naismith or Pitney, both of them potentially, given the delayed start after round one and Naismith doing his knee. And that was probably a mixed reaction. Like, I did okay last year. Like, that was probably an advantage to my season. I picked up Gorn at the right time. I had him for the second half of the year. So it can be a really defining factor in your season, taking this sort of risk. It can be season defining in the positive. It can be season defining in the negative. Mm. And so that's where there's risks here, but the upside is potentially huge. The downside is, depending on how you navigate that downside and what options come up, can be quite bad as well.
Yeah. And as a community, a lot of, you know, thematically, a lot of our mood and our reaction to the season rides on these sorts of things. It's not unsalvageable, but it's work.
Do you remember how up and about we were after Naismith scored 120 in round one last year? And I was like, genius.
We've done it again.
I think Gawn scored like 100. It seemed like,
yeah.
I know everything. One round of football can be very deceiving.
Yeah. Last year, let's blame COVID. If not for COVID, it would have been genius. Anyway, we didn't have anything too specific outside of ruck. So I guess I'll throw the floor to you. Yeah.
So I do just want to ask you, just for our listeners that have gone on this journey with us over the preseason and listened to most of the episodes, what do you think maybe some of the advice or recommendations you made in episode one, and how has that changed to now? Is there anyone that over the course of these podcasts you've ruled out and you've gone, oh, maybe they've changed my mind? Or is there anyone that you've were really hot on that you're not anymore?
At a player level, I mean, I guess Petrarca, McDonald, maybe a couple of guys that we're a bit more excited about that. I guess I called out the Zeebel concern that time of recording, but I think that's probably extrapolated to a degree where, because the other defensive options are so solid, you probably don't need to take the risk there. And Petrarca wasn't helped that he wasn't playing with any friends, but the fact that, you know, you're picking him based on him being a Gary Ablett type player, like just continuing to step on, and he didn't have a huge showing. I know it's preseason, we say don't matter about your premiums, but it's a lot of money that you're spending on a guy that you need to break out to the next level. And that means being the best in the comp. And so the bar is a little bit different there, I think. So that's probably changed a little bit. I mean, more broadly, the ruck situation has panned out obviously differently, but we've already covered that. And I guess the only other thing was and this is probably the main point I want to make, is that I was extra hesitant on a lot of picks based on the shape of how I like to pick plays, where I like to seek out value, where I like to avoid risk. And that has changed a lot with, and I think this was anticipated, but I'd hoped for otherwise, the rookie landscape just being as poor as it has been. That has forced me to all of a sudden go like, and this is the way the team picker was really good in the thought process, right? Like bringing in Impey in a spot where you would otherwise have a premium might allow you to not take a risk like Walsh or Raoul or somebody like that. And so I think that's where things have gotten a lot more interesting for myself, is that the way I want to pick my team, I can't pick it exactly in that way. And so with the rookie situation the way it is, I'm now considering young, impy types, where I think at the start I was just like, ugh, like why pay 210K, 202K for a guy who's going to average 70? Like that just, why am I throwing my money in the bin for that? But it's how hard do you want to push the number of premiums you try and start initially? How many of the top end premiums do you want to pick? How happy are you to take risk in your ruck line? How much risk are you willing to take to absorb a dead rookie when cash generation looks difficult anyway, just so that you can get the right? Because if you ignored cash generation, I'm sure I can design a better team with a healthier mix. It's, do I want to take that extra risk of bringing in a bad D8 so I can push an average D6 on field, because that unlocks something elsewhere on field? I think, yeah, that's probably the part that's changed for me the most, is that this acceptance that I would rather pay 200K for a guy who's playing versus risk just bringing in a shit rookie that just gets dropped after the first round or that scores in the 30s or the 40s. And I guess I'm a bit sad about that, but we all thought that was coming. I know. How about you, Mark?
It's interesting that you say that. And I think the reason why we probably weren't super clear on that in the first episode is that every year in that first episode, we're like, oh, there's no rookies, we need to get mid prices. But then they always show up, and this year they don't seem to be showing up. And maybe that was predictable just because of COVID in Victoria last year, really limiting the amount of exposure some of these draft picks have had. Yeah, similar feelings. I think that probably the biggest difference is really, really similar to you. So Jordan Clark and Dom Tyson coming into my team, I just didn't see that happening. And so I've got quite a few of those 200 to 260K sort of players, which is the sort of mid-pricer I do. Like if I'm going to pick one, that's the price bracket I'm going for. I'm not going for the 350K guys, which I know a lot of people are out there. And sometimes they work out okay. They rarely work out really well. So yeah, that's probably been the biggest change from my team. Who were the one or two people in your team that are not in everyone's sides that you're very hot on?
Ooh, that's probably going to be a bit more challenging. And that's maybe reflective of the fact that I over-index on seeking value and then missing out on the top line guys, especially in the last 2 years, who've carried everybody else. So I am more cookie cutter than I've ever sought to be. Maybe two that, and again, these are not absolutely necessarily locked, the both of these, but Tom Mitchell's one that I probably haven't seen as much externally, but that internally, I guess over the course of 22 rounds, considering the value, blah, 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 I'm probably a little bit more likely to go with. And then the other one would probably be, I think Mills doesn't seem as highly selected. And the two of us, I think we're just drawn to that sort of pick. So I guess if I had to be forced to pick sort of those two uniques, it'd be them. But I don't even think that they're controversial. I don't even know if I extended that question your way where we'd get to. You picked Jaden Short last year. I mean, but that's the thing. I think also this is my 14th year. You talked about some of the other guys dropping off. Like, if not for this podcast, I probably would have stopped Supercoach by now. But we enjoy doing this together and tackling the problems together. But I'm no longer trying to seek out these niche picks as I used to be. And I think in a world where, and I think we've contributed to this, is just that the strategy has gotten so much better. We used to be able to look around the competitive landscape and just go, are these guys seriously recommending these players just because it featured an AFL.com.au article that they had a good preseason? That makes no sense from Supercoach's point of view. If you listen to other podcasts now, a lot of the things that when we first explained, people were like, what the fuck are these guys saying, is now normalized. A captaincy loophole. Nobody was explaining that when we first started explaining that. And I'm not trying to take credit for this, but like, we've been around the game for, you know, 14 years. And a lot of the things that we've championed over time, they've bled out into the community. The guy who came fifth last year is a Patreon subscriber of ours, Laughing Raccoons in our community. Like, it's not just us, but it's also the community of people that we've been through have helped normalize a lot of these. Otherwise, we used to have to call this like a high-level strategy podcast. Now we can just talk, which is cool. But that's also changed the competitive landscape of Supercoach. And I think that also information in general, like 14 years ago, smartphones and stuff were still pretty new. Like, we've just been doing that show this long. And now the access to information, kids doing blogging, you're looking around being like, can't be that long.
I'm like, how did we do trades back then without phones? No rolling lockout, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, man. So things have just changed so much. And I take some small happiness in this without trying to be arrogant about it, but just that we've helped make the competitive landscape harder for ourselves. And that's great, but that means that the opportunity to really step out and dominate a set, like, I've had great seasons in the past where I picked Steve Johnson and nobody else had Steve Johnson, and he averaged 110 in a season where he started at 80, and he was just like season defining for me. Think about how long ago that would have been, because some people might not even know who Steve Johnson is. Like, and, you know, it's just those plays don't really come up as often. And when they do, it tends to be such a freak situation, because even the well understood risks, they're percolated around the community enough that the good people seem to bubble up to the top. Like, we can now generally use ownership stats to sort through the list, and it's a decent starting point. Where in the past, you and I just be like, who the hell is contributing to this stats? We can't even look at this because it's rubbish. It's just whoever got written up in the journos. And even now, the guys at the Herald Sun and stuff, big kudos to them. The quality of their content and the quality of advice is just leaps and bounds what it used to be. And so, yeah, I guess it's really long-winded, unnecessary sort of history lesson, but just I'm not trying to do that anymore, especially for your starting team. There's so much edge to be gained in the trading. You never win your team Supercoach off your starting team. So if anything, I've torpedoed my season from starting teams. I'm not interested in doing that. Start with something relatively safe. Find your niche, figuring out how to trade, because most people, that's the hard part. Like, you can listen to us picking teams, you can come up with a good cookie cutter team, but you'll have to sit with us for a while before you understand how to best optimize your 30 trades throughout a season. And that's our advantage, right?
Yeah, it's interesting hearing you say that. I think that you also have a fear about if your team does crap, you don't want to be dropping off your interest, because you know that you have this crazy grind of podcasts to record. And so I think that in the last few years, you've probably taken less risks with your starting team, whereas I've always probably had two or three more riskier picks. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out this year. And yeah, realistically, It is trading where it comes down to it. That's where the real gains are made in this game. One of my students was picking a team the other day and showing me, and they're like, oh, what if I beat you? There's no way I could beat you. And it's like, in the early rounds, you could definitely beat me. Like 100% you could beat me. It's anyone's game in the early rounds. But like, you haven't done this before. You will drop off with trading no matter how much you think about this stuff. Like, you're really going to have to practice these tradings and learn some hard lessons, because it's the only way to do that. So yeah, interesting history lesson, sir. Thank you, for Professor Marcus. Can we actually get doctorates for this shit? Because we haven't been doing it a while.
Yeah, we're dinosaurs in this industry now. Oh man. All right, Mark, that was really fun. I just want to say, you know, thanks for the banter, and on behalf of the community, the advice. I do play a bit more of a host role, and you do have a very good insight that I haven't always thought about. Thanks, mate, and good luck with picking your team heading into lockout. And yeah, it's going to be an interesting year trying to reach you out in the wild, mate.
Yeah, it is. It's going to be, I do miss the old days of locking your team in on that Friday night or Thursday night or whatever, and then just seeing it ride. It is going to be a stressful weekend next weekend, because you constantly have to be picking and changing your teams and being alert of who's being where and loopholes and everything. We have got our Supercoach Draft League tonight, the draft. That's always a huge night. So I think I've got pick 13. We'll be interested to see how that goes. And yeah, I am, for those that don't know, I'm going to be traveling around Australia this year in a caravan. May have spotty internet coverage, but when I do have coverage, I will be on the show when I can. I think that the biggest thing is going to be 24-hour team sheets and internet coverage on the weekends. Like, I think that I am going to get burnt at some stage pretty badly.
Oh, yes. Give me access to your team to make these sweet last-minute trades, Mark.
I think I may have to do that with someone. There is a famous story a few years ago where someone gave me access to their team to do it while they were on holidays, and I forgot. And so nobody ever let me do that again.
All right, bud. Thanks, community, for joining us again. If you are new to us, smash that subscribe button, and patreon.com/supercoachcoach for bonus content. There's actually hours on there if you haven't subbed yet. Not too late to jump on and get some deeper thinking that we don't get time to cover through on the show. And with that, we'll see you in the season proper. Bye.
See ya. Don't want to get crazy. Don't want to get crazy. Let's get crazy.